It's the AmeriChicks with Kim Munson. The most important story.
The Washington Times said the patriotic Americans donated U.S. flags after protesters raised the Mexican flag over the ICE facility.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
It is not fair that people come in illegally and they have three square meals a day, TVs and all. There's something that is wrong with this picture.
And opinions and ideas that prepare you to tackle the day ahead.
When we get into conversations with people, you can get real bombastic with each other because you haven't read it. You don't know what you're talking about.
It's the AmeriChicks, dissecting issues as right versus wrong instead of right versus left.
So if you understand the issue, then you can have calm, reasonable conversations.
Agree or disagree, let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation. I am Kim Munson, and we've got important things to talk about today. I'm thrilled to have in studio as my guest, kind of a surprise last-minute thing, and it's great to have you here, Kelly Sloan. You are the Executive Director of Freedom to Drive.
I am. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's good to have you here. And the freedom of mobility, people being able to choose in a free market setting how they move around is key. It's inherent to the idea of the American idea. And so I thank you for the work that you're doing with Freedom to Drive.
Well, no, absolutely. And you're, I think you nailed it on the head. You know, the that freedom of mobility is, you know, kind of the key to our economic success in this country. It's part and parcel with capitalism and free markets and, all the other freedoms that we enjoy. Just the freedom to be able to move ourselves from one place to another in the manner we choose. People take that for granted.
We do take it for granted. And there is a real assault on that. I saw that when I was serving on city council. I was seeing that there's planners that really want to plan our lives and move us into the mobility that they think we should move into. And so, Kelly, what we talk about on this show all the time is freedom versus force.
Right.
Force versus freedom. And the freedom to be able to move around is so important. So we'll talk about that in the third and fourth segment because something really interesting happened yesterday.
Yes, it did.
And so we'll talk about that in the third and fourth segment. But ultimately, you know, there's this a narrative of socialism as being romanticized, and socialism ultimately has to come down to force. And Kelly, if something's a really good idea, you shouldn't have to force or incentivize those kinds of things. And incentivize is also a very subjective form of force, Steve. So first of all, thank you to producer Steve. He's running the boards there. Thank you to the team, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie. Appreciate you all. And so we're going to talk about freedom versus force, Steve.
And yeah, take apart that word incentivize, because right behind it are dollar signs, and they're not flowing in the direction you want them to flow.
Yes.
You think they are, but they're not.
Yes, there's all kinds of different ways to take money from your pocket via force and give it over to somebody else. So we'll talk about some of those things. Thank you to each of you listeners out there. You are treasured, you're valued, you have a purpose. Go out there and do that today. And so let's jump in here. We're going to be talking about cars, automobiles. So I thought that we could have some car jokes, Steve, and also some quotes from some of the great car people. So, Walter.
Be careful here. The word joke implies laughter, so I better laugh.
Okay. Inspiration, though. Walter Percy Chrysler. He was born in 1875. He died in 1940. He was an American automotive industry executive, and he was the founder of Chrysler Corporation, which is now a part of Fiat Chrysler Automobiles. Chrysler was born in Wamego, Kansas. Good Kansas boy. He grew up in Ellis, Kansas, where today his boyhood home is a museum. This is fascinating. He began his career as a machinist and railroad mechanic in Ellis, Kansas. He took correspondence courses from international correspondence schools in Scranton, Pennsylvania, earning a mechanical degree from the correspondence program. You know, Kelly, anything is possible in America.
Absolutely.
So here's his quote. He says, "The real secret of success is enthusiasm. Yes, more than enthusiasm, I would say excitement. I like to see men get excited. When they get excited, they make a success of their lives." That is Walter Chrysler. Okay, Steve, fasten your seatbelt. I've got some funnies here for you, okay?
Fire away.
With the rise of self-driving vehicles, this is number one. With the rise of self-driving vehicles, of course, that's a whole different subject for me. But anyway, With the rise of self-driving vehicles, it's only a matter of time before we get a country song where a guy's truck leaves him too.
Now that's good. That's okay. Really good.
Okay. I didn't realize how bad a driver I was until my car navigation system said, in 400 feet, do a slight right, stop, and let me out. And Steve, before marriage, men would wander parking lots aimlessly because they had no one to point out the open parking spots.
Boy. There's some truth.
Okay, first thing, we were going to talk about this yesterday, and we did not get to that. And this was in, okay, it's from Fox Business. It says store owners cannot be jailed for refusing to make wedding invitations for same-sex couples. The city of Phoenix cannot compel an art studio owned by two Christians to design wedding invitations for same-sex couples, the Arizona Supreme Court ruled Monday in a 4-3 decision. Joanna Duca and Brianna Koski, who run Brush and Nib Studio, potentially face $2,500 in fines and 6 months in jail. Okay, we're looking at fours here, Steve, for violating Phoenix's 2013 ordinance that prohibited discrimination based on sexual orientation, gender identity, or expression. Duca and Koski's beliefs about same-sex marriage may seem old-fashioned or even offensive to some, wrote Justice Andrew Gould in the opinion of the court. But the guarantees of free speech and freedom of religion are not only for those who are deemed sufficiently enlightened, advanced, or progressive.
Don't you love that? That's the progressive opinion, I guess. Is that what this is called, the justice's writing?
I think he's probably on the side that said that they don't have to.
Yeah.
I think he's nailing what the progressive agenda is. He says, to conclude, we hold that the ordinance, as applied to plaintiffs' custom wedding invitations and the creation of those invitations, unconstitutionally compels speech in violation of Arizona Constitution's free speech clause. We're talking about freedom versus force. And this is what is so dangerous. We saw this happen with Jack Phillips here in Colorado, where he refused to make a wedding cake for a same-sex couple because it was antithetical to his beliefs. And there's great danger, no matter whether or not, you know, you were excited about the initial ruling here from Phoenix or from the Colorado Civil Rights Commission regarding Jack Phillips. When we start to have government come in and say, if you don't do this, if you don't say this, or if you do this and do say this, either way, we are going to use force to close down your business. That is very dangerous. That's a very dangerous place to be. And Kelly, I really think that the free market can take care of these particular issues. If, in fact, a couple that is celebrating a same-sex marriage and they go to one particular vendor and the vendor says, you know, that doesn't work for me, they can go to another vendor. And so it creates more business. If there's not a vendor that will do that, somebody will start that business. And so I don't think that we have to have the force of government doing this. I think that we need to work towards free markets instead of government coming in and forcing, because we all have different ideas. We've seen a redefinition of words. And then when you don't affirm that redefinition of that word, for government to come in and say, we're going to forcibly take your business, that is a big problem, Steve.
Well, I think I'll continue reading here. The attorney who represented the two ladies and their business said, today, freedom won. Everyone should enjoy the freedom to peacefully live out their beliefs without fear that the government will silence them or force them to promote messages that violate their convictions. That freedom should be protected regardless of whether people share the government's point of view.
Powerful. Kelly?
Yeah. No, I agree. I'm going to mention up front, I'll take off my freedom to drive hat.
Okay.
And put on my
Kelly Sloan hat.
My Kelly Sloan hat as a commentator and columnist for Colorado Politics and the Washington Examiner.
Nice.
How was that for a plug?
I like it.
So, you know, we're talking a lot of these arguments, you know, with Jack Phillips, looks like this one. We've seen a couple others around the country are kind of focusing on, you know, the artistic merit of the people, I would say, being persecuted here. Mm-hmm. You know, Mr. Phillips with his cake, he's making the argument that cake is his art. really, I think what we're talking about is the future of public accommodation laws, which is what, you know, the other side, the LGBTQ community is using to make these arguments and trying to, as you say, you know, using the government force to shut these businesses down when they don't play ball, so to speak. Now, of course, the public accommodation laws were put into effect, I think probably correctly, back in the 60s when there was a larger problem, more, I guess, systemic problem with discrimination against particularly black people at the time. I think the question now is, have we outgrown those laws as a society? You know, was there a role for the government back then in, you know, the early 60s in that, to intervene to correct a wrong that the market, for whatever reason, didn't seem to be correcting because of, you know, ingrained, and you can go back and argue why those, you know, if it was actually government.
Well, you had the Jim Crow laws, though, which were totally, in my opinion, unconstitutional.
Absolutely.
And so you have the Jim Crow laws, which was, again, government forcibly saying that black people could not sit at a particular counter at Woolworths. And so that was against the Constitution. And it might have taken a little bit longer, but I think where we were headed, I think that the free market generally could have fought back on that.
I agree. You know, it's kind of emblematic of, you know, what we see with a lot of government laws are, you know, being brought in. You're using government to come in to correct something that government did before.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I mean, you know, that's what it was. Now, so you can have the argument of whether it was correct or not correct to bring in public accommodation laws, which I'm sure most of your listeners know are the laws that, you know, say that you a public business must accommodate people of all races, all creeds, all religions, and of course more recently all sexual identities and whatnot. So the question now, I mean, that ship has sailed. You know, those laws came into effect in the 1960s. I think what we need to ask ourselves as a society now is, have we outgrown those? Have we progressed enough as a society? Has the market started to take care of that? And do we still need those laws? Do we still need that government force to, try and enforce morality, basically?
And don't you find this so interesting, Kelly? You know what? Let's go to break, because forcing morality, it used to be, you know, here we have government that is really trying to force Christians, in the case of Jack Phillips and in the case of these women in Phoenix, where you have government that is trying to force their morality, their vision, their interpretation of words on Christians. And it used to be that it was the Christians had the
right.
The kind of the bad rap, that they were trying to force their views on other people, which there was that going on as well.
Mm-hmm.
I would submit to you as a Christian that I think that was maybe a use of the Bible in a way to enforce actions on other people. And quite frankly, America is a freedom place.
Mm-hmm.
And in freedom of religion, that was important. That's in our Constitution. And so they didn't think that we should be forcing that on other people. But here you have the religion now of progressivism.
Yes.
Where they want to use government to force their, quote unquote, their belief system.
Right.
Their religion on all of us. And so let's go to break. When we come back, fascinating conversation. And so right now, Kelly Sloan has on his Kelly Sloan hat as a contributor to the Washington Examiner and Colorado Politics. When we get to the third and fourth segment, you'll put your Freedom to Drive hat on. So we'll be right back.
At Hooters, you can watch the games with all your buddies. And when your buddies are the world-famous Hooters girls, there's always plenty of ice-cold beer and those craveable wings that'll knock your taste buds into next Tuesday. Hooters girls know plenty about football, but we really know the fans who live for it. So hang out with all your buddies all season long at Hooters, your official hangout for game day.
Catch all the games at Hooters and enjoy a Bud or Bud Light draft with 10 boneless wings, just $10. Dine for two with the pitcher and nachos, just $20.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For over 30 years, entrepreneur, stylist, and Americhick Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game and freshen your look, email Kim at Americhicks.com for your initial style consult. Kim at Americhicks.com.
Social media is important to the Americhicks, since it's an avenue we can utilize to hear from and speak to all of our friends. For those of you who enjoy listening to the show, we'd love to hear what's on your radar. Follow us and talk to us at Americhicks Twitter and Facebook pages. Also, if you're a business owner who could benefit from some extra foot traffic from like-minded friends, consider advertising on the Americhicks radio show. Contact us at Americhicks.com or email Kim at Americhicks.com.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Americhicks.com.
Oh, welcome back. I'm Kim Munson. I love it when Charlie puts these Westerns in. I just love those songs. Hey, Kelly Sloan, it's great to have you in here. We are having a conversation about issues in this first and second segment, and then third and fourth segment, freedom to drive. Something amazing happened yesterday, so we'll talk about that in segments three and four. But we were unpacking this thing that happened just within the last few days down in the Arizona regarding the Supreme Court in Arizona said that store owners cannot be jailed. Can you believe this? They're in the business of making invitations,
right.
and they could be jailed for not doing something. I mean, that is really scary, Kelly.
Well, it is. And, you know, like we were talking before the break, it all comes down to public accommodation laws, whether you think those are justified or not. And, you know, as I was saying before the break, you know, I think the key question now is, do we still, we can go back and forth whether we ever did need them.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to fall on the side that, you know, when there's an extreme situation like we had in the 60s with the existence of the Jim Crow laws, mm-hmm. which should never have been in place, sometimes, you do need the government to interfere. The government had to interfere in the Civil War, for instance. You know, okay, so, but, you know, we're 40, 50 years past that now. Are we at the point where the public accommodation laws are doing more harm than good? Are they starting to hurt the people that they were meant to help? Are they, kind of tilting the scales too far in the other direction?
Yeah, I think they're actually being used then in a way that it never really was intended to make that happen. And, you know, Kelly, maybe what we need to start to do is to put a sunset. Whenever we pass these laws, maybe we should have a sunset where we come back and revisit it.
You know, it's one good thing about the state of Colorado is we have, in my opinion, far too many state government programs and offices and all. But they all do have a sunset on them. Some are 5 years, some are longer. But, you know, it's one good thing we do in Colorado is we do sunset everything. Now, a lot of them, it's a fairly automatic process, but it does go through the legislature. Which right now, you know, depending on your political alignment, may be a problem. But we do have the sunsets. No, I think you're right. I think there, you know, it's a good idea periodically to revisit some of the things that we as a society have determined at one point were a good idea, and to see, you know, where are we at now? Do we still need this? Is this still doing its initially intended job? And I think with the public accommodation laws, I think it may be time to have a look at those, because essentially what you're saying is that you do not have the right to do business with whomever you please. I think it's time for us to have that discussion as a society. And I think this court case, I think, is a good step and, you know, good first step in the right direction towards that.
Well, I really do, too. So let's go over to another one of our headlines. This is from the Colorado Sun. And the title is, after facing U.S. Supreme Court criticism, Colorado's Civil Rights Division blasted by auditor as slow and not transparent. Now, as you may remember, it was Colorado Civil Rights Commission that basically said to Jack Phillips, if you don't do what we say, if you do not affirm our definition of marriage, then we are going to use the force of government to shut down your portion of your business that bakes wedding cakes. Right. And once again, this should strike terror in the hearts of everyone, no matter what side of the aisle that you're on, because you may be celebrating this particular use by the Colorado Civil Rights Commission, but what about when they come after you regarding making you affirm something that you don't believe? And then, whenever you hear the word commission, council, that means unelected bureaucrat. And so with a commission, these are not people that we can elect or unelect. But they used their power. They tried to use their power against Jack Phillips. But then it looks like they're slow to investigate complaints. They voted on cases in secret and without any documentation about their deliberations, according to a scathing report that was released Wednesday by the state auditor. The negative spotlight comes on the heels of criticism leveled against the entities last year by the U.S. Supreme Court in the high-profile case of Lakewood baker Jack Phillips of Masterpiece Cake Shop, who refused to make a wedding cake for a gay couple. The agencies are tasked with investigating complaints filed by people who believe they were discriminated against in employment, housing, and public accommodations because of their race, religion, sex, sexual orientation, or nationality. The commission is made up of a panel appointed by the governor and approved by the state senate, operating under the auspices of the division. The state auditor's office found that the division is slow to investigate complaints, and the commission operates in a manner that is not transparent. The audit was presented to the Colorado Legislature's Bipartisan Legislative Audit Committee on Wednesday morning, leaving both Democrats and Republicans saying there is clear room for improvement. Kelly, got a comment on that?
Well, yeah, I think, again, you're absolutely correct. When we have all these commissions that have the force of law, but they're unelected, that's what we have the Sunshine Laws for. That's why any... There's a news story just on 9 News the other day about how you have a lot of these smaller boards, commissions, government bodies, fire districts, and that all those meetings are supposed to be open to the public. And a lot of these little rural ones don't necessarily know the rules. You know, they don't know what the Colorado Sunshine Rule is. So they
And that means the open meetings.
And how and when to go into executive session. I mean, a lot of them just say, well, we're going to go into executive session now to discuss some that may need to be discussed in executive session, personnel matters, that kind of thing. What the story was saying is that there is a, by law, that needs to go to a vote, and it has to be this and stated purpose in that. A lot of them don't do that. You would think that the civil rights division would know what the law is.
One would sure think so.
Yeah. I think, you know, the auditor's report, I think, is this is pretty important. I think it's pretty vital that people know that, you know, this commission had, you know, the power to not just put this gentleman out of business, whether you think he should be or not, but they had the power to put him out of business. They had the power to destroy his life, you know, destroy his entire livelihood.
They tried to.
Yeah, his entire livelihood, his reputation, and all that, without any accountability. That in itself is a little frightening. Again, whether you think he was right or wrong, you know, whether you believe public accommodation law. And we should say at this point, again, I'm not an attorney, but it appears to me that Mr. Phillips wasn't violating the public accommodation law anyway. He would sell his products to gay couples. He did. He offered. He said, you know, anything I have on the shelf here, not going to create something special for you. And
at that time when they came in, they had actually gotten married in a different state that had recognized same-sex marriage. Colorado did not at that time.
Right.
So that's even scarier.
Well, yeah, there's that. But I guess my point is he was not violating whether you believe in public. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying whether they I'm not putting an opinion on whether public accommodation laws should or shouldn't be on the books still. I'm just saying I think it's time for that discussion. In this particular case, he didn't do that. He allowed, you know, he welcomed anybody into his store. Mm-hmm. He would sell his product to anybody. He just wouldn't create something special using his artistic talents. And they still went after him. That's the frightening part to me when you have an unelected bureaucracy and you start giving, you know, discussion used to be how much power, you know, the Congress and the state legislatures Well, it used to be how much power the states were giving to the federal government, mm-hmm. which is a discussion I think we still have to have. And then, you know, we had discussion in society about how much power the legislative branch was giving to the executive, mm-hmm. and how much both of them were giving to the judiciary. I mean, for a long time, you've had senators say, you know, when asked on an issue, well, we'll see what the Supreme Court says. I mean, really, isn't it? That's your job to make law. You know, the Supreme Court is there to interpret it. Well, now we've added an element to this that, well, certainly the founders never anticipated, and I don't think a lot of people anticipated for probably the first half of the history of this nation, is how much power all three branches of the government are giving to, you know, that administrative state within the executive. Not just the executive itself, but, you know, all these little bodies, all these little agencies and commissions and all this, you know, how much rulemaking power they have, which has the effect of law, how much enforcement power they have. I mean, there's an incredible amount of power that rests in all these little commissions that, we spend all our time focusing on, you know, what's happening at the state capitol and what's happening in, you know, U.S. capitol and Congress and that. Most of what really concerns us is happening in all these little executive agencies.
You have nailed it. And when I was on city council, I realized, I mean, that we had all these different meetings that we went to with boards and commissions. And maybe it probably was well-intentioned. In some ways, they say, you know, we want public input. But then what I've seen is that well-meaning people get on these boards and commissions, and then they actually can be, in some ways, guided by other bureaucrats to kind of predetermined decisions that take away people's freedom. And
well,
again, they
kind of take on life of their own. You know, when you get, especially, and then when you get so many of them, you know. And again, I'm you know, not going to disparage, for the most part, the people that are on these boards and commissions and agencies. And that, I think they all of them
are well-intentioned.
You know, want to do a good job. I think sometimes they want to do too good of a job, and they start, you know, getting this, I don't know how to word, perhaps hero mentality that,
you know,
we're here to protect, you know, whether it's the environment, you know, consumers or labor or whomever. And you get that zealous, and let's face it, you know, these positions attract zealous people, you know, people that are, you know, action oriented, which isn't a bad thing, but, you know,
When it gets down to
the terms that, you know,
force
that you
and
use.
Control,
exactly.
You know, we have a problem.
Right.
Yeah. So, hey, let's go to break here in just a minute. We have Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, on the line, and there's been such a conversation about interest rates. Jason McBride, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Kim.
What happened to interest rates yesterday?
Well, you know, by the time we got to the actual time of the decision, sorry, Kim, you know, the odds of a rate cut had gone to 50-50. You know, earlier in the month, it was like a 90% chance, and it kept fading. So I won't build the suspense anymore. The Fed cut rates by 0.25%.
Okay, and you and I both talked about it yesterday, that we weren't sure that we really thought that that was needed, but I guess they didn't listen to the show yesterday.
Well, I guess not, and you know, it's always funny to me. In fact, it's hard for me to remember a time, really, when the Fed was cutting interest rates when the market was, you know, almost at a new all-time high. But Kim, sometimes you gotta maybe be out of your own thought. Of course, I'm looking at the stock market. Sometimes I forget there's an economy too, and it's possible, you know, that they're seeing some indicators in the economy. Maybe they're trying to be a little bit proactive. I mean, all in all, though, I mean, I couldn't see a big need for a 0.25 rate cut. The economy seems pretty much fine to me, but they did what they did.
Okay. And how did the market react?
It went up and down. So initially, as soon as the news came out, you know, it was negative. The Dow dropped about 200 points. It kind of messed around for about 15 minutes, Kim, and then started coming back. And by the end of the day, it was actually positive by about 36 points. Some of the other indexes didn't quite get to positive, but the general reaction was the same. S&P, NASDAQ, both down. Then they climbed back up. The Fed is seems undecided for the rest of the year, at least right now. There, it seems like, again, about a 50-50 chance that we get another rate cut between now and the end of the year. And they also talked about maybe doing some quantitative easing again by buying bonds back onto the Fed's balance sheet.
Ooh, I don't think I like that one, Jason.
Well, I don't lie. I mean, bonds are way up high right now. Let's buy them when they're cheap.
Yeah, I'm not.
You know, let's buy them when they're cheap, and then maybe the Fed can make some money.
Well, let's keep an eye on that. I know that you watch all this, and that you know, if people want more information about any of these things, or also you guys do a weekly podcast, and all that is at chickspresidential.com. That's chickspresidential.com. So there's all kinds of great information there. Jason McBride with Presidential Wealth Management.
Yes, that's true. And like you said, Kim, give us a call for a discovery session. That's, you know, get a second set of eyes. Get a second opinion on what you've got going on. If it's great, we'll tell you. If there's some things that could be fixed, we will tell you that, too. It's no obligation. It's free, and it's certainly not high pressure.
Definitely. And the phone number, Natalie will be at the switchboard at 730-303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. Jason McBride, thank you so much. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Have a great show, Kim.
Thanks so much. When we come back, we have Kelly Sloan in studio with us, and you can put back on your Freedom to Drive hat during break, okay?
I have many.
Yeah, okay. And then we have on the line Matthew Groves as well, and Matthew is title, Matt, what should I say? You are a man of many hats as well. How should I introduce you?
I'm the Vice President of Legal and Regulatory Affairs.
Okay. And when we come back, Matt and Kelly have some very interesting news about something that President Trump did yesterday. I'm actually pretty excited about it, so we'll be right back.
Are you looking for news, not propaganda? Ready for a news source you can actually trust? How about a news site that doesn't want to sell you a subscription? Visit CompleteColorado.com to see all the latest news from around Colorado. Complete Colorado's staff scours news sources from around the state and nation to bring you only the top stories that affect you right here in our great state. Updated three times a day, CompleteColorado.com has full-time reporters doing original investigations and reporting like newspapers used to do, as well as opinion and political commentary from a variety of Colorado voices. And CompleteColorado.com is the only place to read columnist Mike Rosen. Always fresh content, always free, always informed. CompleteColorado.com, your complete source for Colorado news.
Don't miss Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Join Kim Munson at Water's Edge Winery in Centennial or Colorado Cork and Keg in Castle Rock. In Fort Collins, attend Vino and Veritas at Ginger and Baker. Kim Munson would like to thank Presidential Wealth Management Loveland, Presidential Wealth Management Greenwood Village, Tina Francone with Straightforward Shooting, and Grand Lake U.S. Constitution Week for their generous support. Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Sign up today.
All AmeriChicks sponsors are an exclusive partnership with the AmeriChicks and are not affiliated or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the AmeriChicks with Kim Munson and grow your business, contact Kim at AmeriChicks.com. That's AmeriChicks.com.
Hey, welcome back. I am Kim Munson, and we are having a conversation about movement, about mobility. And Matthew Groves is on the line. Matthew, welcome. You are with the Colorado Automobile Dealers Association, and you realize how important it is that people have the freedom to move about the way they want to, without force. Well, I think Matt, he'll be here in a minute, I think, so... Okay, and Kelly, we'll go over to you. You are with Freedom to Drive.
Yes.
And again, when we say the freedom to choose about how they move, that means without government force coming in and incentivizing one mode of transportation over another, letting them compete in the free market. And we've seen a real assault on everyday individuals freedom to do that. I don't think that a lot of people realize it yet, but we're going to start to see these effects very soon.
Yeah, we are. So first of all, the Freedom to Drive Coalition is a coalition of businesses, organizations, trade groups, individuals, consumers around the state that are doing just exactly that, precisely that, advocating for our freedom to transport ourselves around the state as we see fit. Our primary policy objective over the last few months was the zero emission vehicle standard, which we'll talk about here shortly. But you know, it goes beyond that. As you mentioned before, there is something of a war on individual mobility. That's part of an agenda that wants to push people out of individual ownership of cars and into public transport, onto bikes, onto pretty much anything but
individual vehicle that they like.
Right, and you see that with lane restrictions. I mean, anybody that's driven downtown Denver, going up or down Broadway or Lincoln, and they've taken all those lanes away for bikes and for buses.
And then they wonder why there's congestion.
Well, exactly.
They say we have congestion, so we want to do something with government to try to relieve congestion, but they actually caused the congestion to begin with.
Right. It's a fairly unrealistic view of, I guess, human nature, as much as anything else. Thinking that they can use government policy to force people out of their vehicles. Well, people have vehicles for a reason. The convenience, the comfort. I mean,
safety.
It's going to be the safety. It's going to be it's going to start getting pretty cold here in a couple months, and there's something to be said about a car heater in the middle of January. So that's mostly what we're put together to try and address are some of these issues associated with governmental laws and policies that are trying to manipulate the market in a way that's, we think, counterintuitive and ultimately counterproductive and, is going to hurt people's ability to
thrive and prosper,
themselves.
I think.
Yeah.
So, and we have Matthew Groves back. Matthew is with the Colorado Automobile Dealers Association, and he has really been watching what is going on. And Matthew, first of all, I want to say that I think people are voting. I know that CDOT is doing a quote-unquote listening tour throughout the state to find out about how people like to travel around. I mean, I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to figure out that people are voting with their individual personal cars, and they still are willing to sit in traffic because they like that. So I'm not sure we have to have a listening tour to figure that out. But Matthew, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Kim. One of our dealers has a saying, everybody wants to go to heaven, nobody wants to die. I think the goal of environmental cleanup and clean air is one that we can all get behind. But when you start asking people about who's ready to make that sacrifice and get out of the car, the fervor amongst even the most environmentally minded people dies down quite a bit.
Well, and to that point, I want to make a clarification. I think I wrote an op-ed, I meant to anyway in my brain, about ZEVs and LEVs. So ZEV stands for zero emission vehicle, and LEV stands for low emission vehicle. And so in a way, that's almost a misnomer. It's a way of making people think that's exactly what it is, and it's not true. You have to look at the complete production effects of all vehicles. So as a ZEV or a LEV, actually, if you look at what goes into the batteries and the rare earth minerals that have to be mined in third world countries, for example, in the Congo, we have children that are doing a lot of that mining. When you look at the complete picture, your internal combustion engines actually are quote-unquote cleaner than these ZEVs and LEVs, but they're using this narrative so that they can use force to try to get people out of their personal vehicles.
There have been a couple of published studies putting in two vehicles head-to-head, say the hybrid Camry versus the Tesla Model 3, things of that nature, where it's shown lifespan emissions, the hybrid actually is a little bit cleaner. I think the narrative that the state passed when we were doing the regulations is that they started the emissions of the zero emission vehicle at its completion. So all that cobalt stripping, all that lithium mining, the carbon that is emitted in the transmission of electricity from a charging station to a lithium-ion battery, none of that was counted towards the vehicle. It was all pushed off to other sources or pushed off to other places. And that you know, put the thumb on the scale a little bit when it came to the emissions way.
Right. You know, one other thing, Matthew, is we never have, at least I've never really seen a serious commentary regarding what's going to happen to these batteries, you know, several years down the road when, you know, somebody has to get a new battery. I understand they're really, really expensive. But where are we going to put all those old batteries? I have not heard about that. And that seems like that's going to be an environmental problem.
You know, I don't want to get too far afield. We used to slow boat them back to China. China recently has stopped taking them. So there is one facility in the United States that attempts to recycle these things. Now, generally, when you're talking about a standard car battery, you can get a couple hundred bucks back to recycle them, just sort of scrap value. But when you're asking this facility to take a lithium-ion battery, you have to affirmatively pay a couple hundred dollars to have them take it off your hands, and then you have to ship it. It's shipped as sort of a dangerous material, so it requires quite a bit of effort. And at the end of the day, you know, we have one particular battery recycler in this state where the batteries are just piling up on a shelf and he can't take anymore.
So that's going to be a problem. Kelly, do you have a comment on that?
Not just on the batteries. Matthew mentioned the emissions related to the electrical production, you know, going from you know, the generating facility to the charging station. We got to remember that in Colorado, in the United States, most of our electricity comes from fossil fuels, natural gas and coal. In Colorado, it's mostly coal, and it will be that way for at least the next few years. Natural gas is
Of course, Governor Polis wants to get us to totally, quote-unquote, renewables.
Yeah, without nuclear, it's not going to happen. I mean, the science just isn't there. The issues, of course, are the biggest issue is storage. You can't store. It's almost cliche now to say the sun doesn't always shine, the wind doesn't always blow, but it's true. Yeah, so you need to be able to store that energy, and you know we don't know how to store energy very well. That's why these batteries in these vehicles are so enormous. I mean, you're looking at 1,000 pounds or more for some of these batteries, and they don't last forever. You know, we don't know. We're not very good at storing energy, and until we address the issue somehow of storing solar and wind aren't going to make more than about 20-25%, which is what we've seen for several years. So most of our electricity is coming from coal and natural gas, mostly coal right now. So a lot of these EVs, you know, this makes their heads spin when you tell their owners this, but they're coal-powered cars.
Mm-hmm. And we need to have these honest narratives about this, Matthew. Now, we're talking about ZEVs, LEVs, and there's been a couple of executive orders. One, as Governor Hickenlooper was going out the door, and then Governor Polis when he came in. And these are things that I don't think hardworking, everyday people realize happened out there, but we're going to start to see the effects of that. And that is they are these executive orders are using government force, saying to dealers that if you do not sell a certain percentage of your portfolio as electric vehicles, then you would have to start to pay a fine or a fee. Now, we had the carrot as far as trying to incentivize folks to buy electric vehicles, and many people did. And I'm not saying, I'm not against electric vehicles. What I really get frustrated with is force. Government force. And so initially there was this incentive of $7,500, I think, from the feds and $5,000 from Colorado income tax credits. Well, when you give somebody a credit over here, that means somebody else is going to have to probably pay more. But that didn't totally work. They weren't getting the numbers. So then we have these executive orders that are trying to tie us to the California emission guidelines. And in essence, forcing people to buy these vehicles. If they don't, then there is a penalty. And to offset that penalty, there's only one company where where you can buy credits for that, and that happens to be Tesla. So once again, you have government picking and choosing winners and losers. So Matthew, I kind of set that up. Is there anything else you want to say about that? We're going to go to break, and then we'll hear what you were in the room in Washington, D.C. when you heard something that I think is very exciting. But anything else on that before we go to break?
I was. Well, you know, I think the whole industry is at the service of its customers. If you want to buy an electric vehicle today without a ZEV rule in place, You can do that. Now, you mentioned the $12,500 back that's universally available through the government. If you have certain utility providers, if you're buying from certain utility, or I'm sorry, from certain auto manufacturers, there's actually more money on that car, so you can end up at the end of the day with $20,000 off a $35,000 vehicle. That's available to you today, regardless of whether or not we have a mandate. What the state is doing is saying that manufacturers must deliver to automobile dealers a certain amount of zero-emission vehicles. So when you come walk the lot, the cars that you want to see are going to be increasingly disappearing, replaced with these electric vehicles that don't sell particularly well in Colorado right now, just because when the manufacturer delivers that car to the dealer, that's when they earn their ZEV credit.
Well, and don't you, just a question, and we'll go to break and then come back, but it seems like if the cars that people do not want to buy here in Colorado are on the lot, then they're going to go to a neighboring state and buy the car that they want there. Seems like that.
Believe it or not, the government has actually blocked that. Because of the LEV rule, if it's not a low-emission vehicle, you won't be able to register it in Colorado, even if you go to Wyoming or New Mexico to buy it.
No way.
You got to remember, they've
really hemmed the consumer in here.
Yeah, okay. LEV and ZEV work together to really put the screws to the consumer, to put it vulgarly.
Okay, I just have to clarify this, and then we're going to go to break. Did you just say that if you went and bought the vehicle that you wanted in Wyoming or Kansas, that you could not then register it in Colorado? Did you just say that, Matthew?
When the LEV rule starts, and I believe that's model year 2022 or calendar year 2021, if you open the door and there's not a low-emission vehicle sticker on the inside of the door, you won't be able to register that vehicle.
Oh, yep. Boy. Boy, Matthew, you're getting my blood pressure going. Okay, but there you have some good news. We're going to go to break. We'll be right back. This is Kim Munson. Kelly Sloan is in studio. He's the executive director of Freedom to Drive. Matthew Groves is on the line. He's with the Colorado Automobile Dealers Association. We'll be right back.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
This week at the 88 Drive-In, keep your windows rolled up and your vehicles locked because things are about to get creepy. Friday the 13th through Thursday the 19th, see three scary movies for $9. It Chapter 2, and Scary Stories. Monday through Thursday, get one 12-inch pizza served fresh and hot, along with two 16-ounce sodas, all for only $12. Sip on some hot apple cider, along with a sweet, crunchy churro. We're open 7 days a week, so get directions now on the 88 Drive-In Facebook page or 88drivein.net.
Hey, welcome back. I am Kim Munson. In studio with me is Kelly Sloan. He is the executive director of Freedom to Drive, which I like the freedom to drive. I like the freedom of mobility. On the line is Matthew Groves with the Colorado Automobile Dealers Association. You guys have my head spinning on what you just said about not being able to register your car if you go and buy it in another state. You talk about force and taking away freedom. Matthew, this is not a good thing. But something happened. You were back in Washington, D.C. Tell our listeners what happened.
Correct. So the administrator of the EPA came out and announced. I should back up and discuss the regulatory aspect of this. So when they made the Federal Clean Air Act in Congress, they made a second rule called the EPCA. They determined what the miles per gallon should be, and we call it the corporate average fuel economy. So that says, say, for instance, Ford makes 4 miles, then four models. Averaging out those four models, you have to hit a certain miles per gallon. That's what the fuel economy standard is. Under the Obama administration, they made rules for how that should track up so that we're actually improving a miles per gallon. So back when they made this, there was a section that allowed California to have a standard that was actually more strict, more severe than the federal standard. Now, you know, under Article 6 of the Constitution, when the federal government makes a standard, it's under the Supremacy Clause. It will preempt any state standard that's contradictory. But since the advent of the Clean Air Act, California has actually gotten a waiver from the EPA, from the federal government, saying you can have this more strict standard because it's going to lead to cleaner air for you.
And Matthew, when did that happen?
Yes.
When did they get that waiver?
You know, the EPA came about in 1972, and I believe it goes all the way back to that.
Okay.
It's been around for some time. They've moved that standard over 10 times, so they've applied for new waivers to change that standard, and traditionally they've always been granted. But essentially, when they want to make a waiver, when they want to move the standard, it's up to the EPA to decide whether that's still necessary under the current environment. So again, traditionally they've always been approved, but Director Wheeler announced through the Trump administration that they were actually going to revoke California's authority to make a standard in conflict with the federal standard. This is great news for the industry because previously auto dealers had been making two versions of cars. One you can sell in the low-emission vehicle states that would comply with California standard, and one that you can sell in the other states that meets the national standard. So what we're doing here is collapsing those into one standard and saying there's a one national program standard so that no matter where you buy a car, it will meet the national standard. And we can do away with those issues that we were talking about, not being able to register a vehicle you bought because it doesn't have the proper sticker on it that says it's California compliant.
Well, I think this is huge. Kelly, what do you think is going to happen?
Well, I'll let Matt talk to the legal aspects, but I mean, it's going to be in court. I mean, California has already indicated that they're going to sue the Trump administration over this announcement, this decision. So it's going to be in the court for quite some time. But I think on a practical matter, it for the time being, and again, I'll let Matt comment more on this, but it seems to do away with the authority under which the state of Colorado recently enacted both the LEV rule and the ZEV rule that they enacted last month.
So, Matthew, what do you think is going to happen?
Well, I think this is really fascinating. The way that Colorado adopted the California standards, they couldn't create their own standard. They had to adopt California regulations verbatim. Right. California standard, again, I think it's widely uncontested. They developed a standard under Section 177. If Section 177 doesn't exist, they can't have their own standard, and the other states who have followed them are put back into the federal program. So I think the ultimate outcome of this is going to be that the state of Colorado will not be able to punish those auto manufacturers who failed to meet the California standard anymore, which takes the teeth out of the ZEV program and the LEV program, both of which essentially combine to make up one Regulation 20 in Colorado. And I think this will set us back to how things were before the regulation. So I think the net effect is that we've just spent a lot of time and money and resources adopting these rules, and these rules will become ineffective anymore.
Wow. I have to say I am really excited about this. Now, I've seen some of the headlines. They're saying Trump rolls back clean air rules, implying that he likes dirty air. That is not the case. And Kelly and I were talking about, and you mentioned as well, as you look at the complete production of a ZEV or an LEV, if you really compare that, they're actually not as environmentally clean as our internal combustion engine. So this is the words that we hear are force, punish. Those are not the words of freedom people. Now, if from an environmental standpoint, if an electric vehicle wants to make the case to the consumer how they, you know, would be better for the consumer can make a free choice to buy that vehicle without all of the incentives, which is forcibly taking money from one person to give to another, picking winners and losers, or the words that I heard you say, Matthew, punish, force. Those are really scary words, but in a free market, if people want to buy those ZEVs or LEVs, that's fine. But this is monumental what happened. And you were in the room when they announced they were going to do this, right, Matt?
I was. And, you know, there definitely is a force element to the program itself. I think what the Trump administration is doing here is realizing that the program is failing. When we talk about zero emission, everybody talks about California because California has massive incentives, financial and otherwise, to get electric vehicles to 6% of their sales, which is not tremendously many. There are eight other states on this program, and they are all failing the standard. Some are doing worse than Colorado is without the mandate. So I think here we're looking at a situation where manufacturers have two options. They can either keep producing cars that people want to buy and will sell, or they can pull all of that research and development money out of safety features, out of maybe pursuing autonomy and some of the features that your car has, and dump it all into fuel efficiency. And we still may not get there, because the two things that a government regulation can't do is it can't take away a consumer's free will, and it can't will technology into existence.
They've been trying.
They have. But, you know, the way we got to this current mileage per gallon was because at the end of 2018, the Obama administration rushed through a midterm review of the standard and said, we're going to hold the standard that we had before, because if we do anything else, we'll have to open up a rulemaking that will run into the next administration. That was why the Trump administration called a timeout and went back to review the rule and came to the conclusion that this is not the best decision for us. It's going to be practically impossible for cars to get there, for the manufacturers to get there, and people aren't buying them at the same rate that they're buying SUVs and trucks. Now, again, that doesn't, just because we don't have a standard doesn't mean states can't aspire to do better. They can encourage people to buy the right kinds of cars and sell the right kind of cars. Just not going to be able to compel manufacturers to buy compliance credits from a private sector company.
Wow. Okay. Gentlemen, we are just about out of time. Matthew Groves, thank you so much. I think that this is a great step for freedom here. So thank you so much for being with us this morning.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And Kelly Sloan, thank you so much for being here. Do you have
Absolutely.
Just a quick thought?
You know, this ZEV fight, I mean, it comes down to what you always talk about between freedom and force. And, you know, again, I'm not against electric vehicles either. I'd have one myself if I could afford one, just to boot around mm-hmm. town and commute. But when you have the government try and manipulate the market towards whatever agenda, mm-hmm. you're going to have unintended consequences, and those are almost always negative, as they were in this case. So let the market do it. The market does work in this case.
You got
More people are buying EVs.
So Kelly Sloan, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much.
Our quote for today is from Louis Chevrolet. He was the Swiss race car driver and the co-founder of the Chevrolet Motor Car Company in 1911. He says, movement is the universal language of personal freedom. So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.
And I don't want no one to cry, but tell them.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker, commentators, hosts, their guests, and callers. They are not necessarily the views and opinions of Crawford Broadcasting or KLZ Management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.